This podcast is proud to be part of the TalkSport Fan Network. TalkSport. Powered by fans.
Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. How to get 30, 30, how to get 30, how to get 20, 20, 20, how to get 20, 20, how to get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month? Sold!
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
The TalkSport Fan Network is proudly supported by McDelivery, bringing you the food you love. McDelivery brings a top-tier lineup of food right to your door. No matter the result, you'll always be winning with McDelivery. Order now on the McDonald's app and you'll get rewards points delivered too, so that ordering today means some tasty rewards for tomorrow. Only via app at participating restaurants. 18 plus rewards registration required. Points only on menu items, delivery fee and terms apply. See mcdonalds.com.
So going back to Justed, Dan, one of your gripes was a kind of a lack of mobility, but it was a pretty good backflip from him.
No. This wasn't like Loire world-class Olympic standard backflip. This was like a donkey from Shrek throwing himself into the air. And it was, you know, don't lie, you look back at it now, it was 50-50 whether that was going to be a successful landing that wasn't going to result in a Kozak-level injury, to be honest, from where I was sitting. But I'm delighted he scored two goals, and long may it continue.
When I go home late at night, this is a song that I really like to sing right now, so I'll play it for you. It's called My Old Man.
Customers, this is the voice of your god, Randy Lerner. Congratulations on your win against the Rotherham. It romantically nourished me to sleep.
Welcome to the My Old Man Said podcast show. I'm David Michael, the editor of My Old Man Said. We start this episode on a more somber note after the untimely passing of former Aston Villa striker Dalian Atkinson. I was thinking of Dalian's Aston Villa career after the tragic news, and I soon hit the realisation that Dalian had been front and centre of some of my favourite personal moments of supporting Aston Villa. I mean, who scored on his Villa debut at Hillsborough, potentially one of the best away days I've been to, which was also Big Run's first game in charge, Dalian Atkinson. It was always my dream to see Villa win a cup at Wembley, and in 1994 in the League Cup final, who scored the opener, terrorised Bruce and Pallister all game, and led us to victory, Dalian Atkinson. The emotional roller coaster that preceded that, the semi-final with Tranmere Rovers, who was the inspiration personified, took the game by the scruff of the neck and at times was taking on Tranmere on his own before scoring the last gasp goal that took us into extra time. Dalian Atkinson. Who scored Villa's first ever goal in the Premier League? Well, I was there at Portman Road to witness, along with about 2,000 other Villa fans, Dalian Atkinson score it. A couple of days later, while walking on the high street in Lincoln, I bumped into a Leeds United friend of mine, and he began telling me about he'd just bought a lime green Ford Capri. An hour later, we were in that lime green Ford Capri, impulsively driving to Villa Park to see Villa versus Leeds. Who scored Villa's goal in the 1-1 draw? Dalian Atkinson. In that season, Villa were challenging for the title against Manchester United. And when the teams clashed at Villa Park, Villa won 1-0. Who scored that winner? Dalian Atkinson. There's been other great moments like the infamous umbrella goal against Wimbledon. But no, it's a sad passing, and if this was a radio show, I'd be dedicating the next song to Dalian Atkinson and his family at this time. But let's crack on with the podcast proper. In the show coming up, we'll be talking about Doc Tony's first week in the trenches at Villa Park, our verdict on the first week in the championship, a look at the areas of the Villa team like the defence, the midfield. We'll also take a closer look at the enigma that is Rüdiger Stead, and also profile various other Villa players in the mix. Those that look like they're going to have an impact this season, and also those that probably are going to make up the bomb squad part deux. Before we get to the core of the show, which was recorded on the evening of the Rotherham win, if you would like to support the My Old Man Said podcast, because tell you what, it takes a lot more time putting it together than I expected, especially the editing, please visit us on myoldmansaid.com and become a patron. It's like the old days when people used to pay for stuff, and it is much appreciated. Anyway, joining me back, due to popular demand, Dan Rogers from the Villa Underground blog, and also with his silky tones, the My Old Man Said writer, Chad Wren.
Welcome, gentlemen.
Hello there.
Were you skipping out of Villa Park today? A bit of a change of mood than the usual pilgrimage?
I had a positive stroll from the... It was... It's like a distant memory that it soon comes back to you, like riding a bicycle where you go, it is normal to win 3-0. What? How come we didn't score 6? You know, that's the kind of ridiculous thing that you're discussing on the way back to the car. So, all good.
Same with me as well. Straight into the Villa shop, got myself a new top.
What? Did you?
With a blue sky, wind through my hair.
See, this is what happens. Success breeds merchandise sales. If only Villa had cottoned onto this earlier on.
Tom Fox, are you listening?
Yeah. Are you listening, Tom? That's all you had to do was get us a team. Not a team built on statistics, a team that would actually win games. Then merchandise and shirt sales would skyrocket.
Who would have thought?
Now, what I've failed to mention to the listeners was it's a bit like Gary Lineker and his bet that if Leicester won the league, he would do his first show in his underpants. I mean, what we said, and we actually forgot to tell you last episode, was anytime Villa win, we will be recording this podcast completely naked. So this is our first attempt at that. So hopefully it hasn't put you off too much so far. I was talking to my friend, I had dinner with a friend I hadn't seen for a few months, and he was talking about a non-league team, actually Lincoln City. They give their players an app, which after the game, it sends them a message and it gives them seven things that they did right, seven things that they did wrong, and then suggestions for the next game or, you know, training the next week. So in terms of takeaways from the first three games, I'm not going to ask for seven, but pros and cons. Let's talk about pros. What have you taken away from the first week of the championship season?
I'd say in terms of positives, I'd definitely say the passion's there and effort and the working hard. That's definitely a positive in considering from last season, yeah.
Well, even in the Luton game?
Yeah. Wow. From Elphick on the bench, yeah. I'm just all Tommy Elphick at the moment. He's literally my idol.
We'll just go through them quickly. I mean, Sheffield Wednesday, that was a disappointment, but it wasn't, you know, it wasn't the biggest surprise. And the first game of a season is the first game. Any team can pretty much beat anybody. What impressed you from the Sheffield Wednesday game, Dan?
We had a good spell, and I thought that we looked more of a team than we had for a number of months. We looked a lot better than we'd looked in pre-season, I thought. Ultimately, we were undone by a poor clearance and an unfortunate ricochet off a header, and the kid runs onto it and finishes. I think you jump forward to the Luton game. That was obviously poor, but I think what that did is it told us the four or five players who have got no future at the club, and then you jump to today and you can see how I think all of the new players started, didn't they? That's a huge positive, and I think Chad mentioned Elphick. Yeah, there's going to be some man crushes, I think, for Elphick, because he looks top draw so far.
Yeah.
Chester seemed to grow into the game
calm,
as well.
Chester did.
For me today. I thought he looked a bit... Yeah, he looked really calm and...
As in good on the ball.
Yeah.
Yeah, well, there were just two or three touches where I could imagine a clerk or a baker or hopelessly hacking at it and kicking it into the sky and us all wondering, well, when will this end up in the net? And there were just two or three nice touches where, not complicated, yeah, but the kind of thing we never do. It takes the pressure off.
Yeah, there was an example of that in the second half where he did like sort of a Cruyff turn and managed to bend it around the player to Elphick. You never see a player do something like that in our past defenders.
I mean, just talking about Chester for a little bit more, because he wasn't really the player I was. It came out of left field for me. I wasn't expecting to see him in our squad this season. And I had a very quick chat with a West Brom fan who said that whilst he was there, he was played out of position. So they never really saw him. And I mean, that's good. I mean, clearly there's a little bit of versatility there, but we need a centre half. And he looked far more assured than anything else I've seen recently at centre half.
One Baggies fan said to me, he came on as a sub when they were 2-0 up against Everton, came on as a centre-back, and they ended up losing that game 3-2. So I think that was the last time Tony Pulis considered him as a centre-back. I think maybe his height worked against him at West Brom as well. Was he 5'11"? But we're now in a situation where we've got 2 5'11" centre-backs in what is meant to be like a physical league,
yeah,
as the cliche goes. I mean, do you think that will be a hindrance, or do you think it doesn't matter because they're actually decent players?
Looking from today, I don't think it really matter, especially corners. We would just rely on Rudy Gusted to be our centre-back. The defensive clearances from Gusted today are unreal, but yeah. I think it might come up in some games, like the one who played for Wednesday, the striker that came on. The big striker, he looked about 6 foot
right, yeah,
four.
Yeah.
And he causes problems straight away. Maybe it might be a hindrance. But apart from that, they both work hard. They're both really good at positioning. So I doubt it.
I think the thing to take today was that, I mean, that's true. But and I think that their number nine had some luck with the balls that were hoofed up to him, and he was winning the headers. He was definitely.
Mm-hmm.
But anything on the floor, we dealt with. Beyond trying to pump the ball through us, that they had very little Rotherham. And there'll be enough teams in the division, I think, that, well, we can outthink them.
We didn't really look like weak when it was from set pieces. We weren't troubled from set pieces, either, were we really? And that's where most sort of aerial goals come from.
So, I mean, sticking with the defence, and let's focus on the game against Rotherham. There was a few raised eyebrows when Bakuna was selected as right back. What did you think of that?
I've never been Bakuna's biggest fan, and I think that you almost have to give him a job and keep him limited to it and say, look, this is what you've got to do.
We have a problem at right back, because is he the solution?
I don't know if he's the solution. He probably had one of his best games in a Villa shirt today.
In my opinion, I'll just pick him over Alan Hernalder and Richards. Even though he's not the solution, obviously not. I feel like we do need to bring in a right back, like we've mentioned before.
Yeah.
But yeah, as for a backup, as soon as that right back had a problem, like a niggle or suspension, I'd put Bakuna straight in there now.
I think today's selection puts a massive question mark on Mr. Richards' future at Aston Villa, because I think a few would have been surprised him not giving the nod today, for sure.
But Richards has offered so little. I think that there's this myth around him, and I think that we all bought into it when he joined the club. And
I noticed when he played right back so far this season, when he gets the ball, he doesn't play the ball and then overlaps. He cuts inside and joins the centre forward, which leaves him like terribly out of position straight away. If the opposition retrieve the ball, he's not tracking back on the flank. He's in the middle of the park. I've become fascinated with Richard's positioning ever since pre-season last season. It's astonishing how he's kind of got away with it, because he didn't seem to know where to be at any given time.
All over the place, and there were countless examples last season, regardless of whether he was at centre-half or right-back or wherever he put himself on the pitch. He was always the one where, when you used to look at the highlights of or the goal we conceded, you'd look at Richards and you'd think, what is he doing? And that was countless times last season. And so many managers now must have come in and worked with him. I mean, he's been overseas at Fiorentina and whatever. He's not cutting it, and he falls into that bunch of Villa players that if they weren't there or they left, you wouldn't be that bothered. And I'd be happy to pick up more Chesters and that type of player and more Elphicks. I'd be willing to go with that sort of player over.
Yeah.
Well, that's the key, really. They look so out of depth and out of position at right back. If you would spot him at centre back, it'd be even worse. It's almost like a calamity.
Yeah, well, we don't mention him at centre back anymore.
Keep that one quiet.
Keep that one quiet. No. And also, Sissoko, I thought, had a reasonably decent game today.
Yeah.
And he seems to, he's deliveries actually has gone up a notch or two over, well, from pre-season onwards. I mean, that creates an interesting position because you've got Joe Bennett, who was gone until the good doctor pulled the plug. But do you think that was a case of them actually wanting to sell him and actually get some money rather than him being back in De Matteo's plans?
Probably sell him more than that. Because even on the Birmingham Mail article as well, it was like his surplus requirements in De Matteo's plans. So I don't know. I can't see him having a role.
It's a bit of a strange one. I think it was more financially that deal was not good for Villa.
Yeah. He obviously wants a move. So we'll probably look for a better offer, I think, and get him out the door.
Before the first podcast show, we actually did a recording and we decided not to run with that as the first episode because I think fans would have had to pull out the razor blades. It was bordering on doom, never mind negativity. But one of the things that came up, and I'm aiming this one at you, Dan, was... I think you said that Rüdiger Stead was the worst Aston Villa player you'd ever seen in your life following the Villa. Do you care to readdress that statement?
I will. I know. Let's revisit it now. I think he's, as a footballer, one of the most limited players that I've seen to date. Now, I think he did a number of great things today. I think he got great service.
Which makes a big difference. Away.
Yeah, it does.
Huge, huge, huge. And what he doesn't have is, and I know this is a big leap of comparison to Benteke. Benteke could make things out of nothing for himself and would do... Gested can't do that. Now, the two goals he scored today, great, great cross, great header. Nothing wrong with that. But the 1-2 or the interplay where McCormack squares the ball, he has a lot to do when he finishes it, but he's 8 yards from goal, and I would expect a striker to finish that. And he finishes it fantastically. What I would say is look at the 45 minutes when he was on the pitch against Luton.
Yeah.
What did he do? And I do wonder whether in the time that's gone since the Luton game to Rotherham, has someone actually said to him, look, if you want to be top dog here, you've got to deliver.
Yeah.
And he's probably rightly said, well, you've got to put the ball on my head from 6 yards and I'll score. I think if we can accommodate him, and it looks quite an exciting foursome of Gested, Ayew, McCormack, Grealish, that's good.
Yeah.
I like that because it offers a bit of everything, which last season everything fell on Gested, I think, for some games, and he's quite limited in some areas.
Oh, I'd say the difference today was the fact that McCormack and Gested worked really well together. And the fact that the midfield managed to get the ball into them really early.
Yeah,
McCormack and Gested, I think, will be lethal this season.
Well, I think you hit the nail on the head there about getting the ball into them early because all the crab-like passing across the front of the 18-yard box of the opposition has... I mean, that's let us down for the last four seasons, so it's a complete waste of time.
Pointless. Absolutely pointless.
Maybe this is something that's been drilled into Gested, that he's got to make those runs and let's have a bit more urgency with getting the ball in there.
Well, you've got one of the best headers of the ball. You might as well use it.
Well, yeah, exactly. Yeah. So what do you think about McCormack so far? Because when you look at his stats, he's a 1-in-3 scorer, so I was expecting him to score today.
I like it. I like
it. It's like his brain's always ticking.
His movement's great. He looks really predatory in... You know, he had a great shot in the first half, and this is where he differs to Gested, really. He picked the ball up, he turned, nothing else was really on. He just spanked it at the goal. You know, and that's quite Benteke-esque, really, that sort of seizing that moment. The thing I think I mentioned in the first podcast, the assists and those little interplays, he's really a smart footballer, and he's quite hard as well. I do like that about him. And I think that what you'll get is, or what we'll benefit from, those little flicks, those little 1-2s where... He'll be in and around that position that's quite natural for a striker. Gested should be able to feed off that, and I'd like to think Ayew should feed off that.
I think Grealish will actually be brought into the game more with McCormack because he's somebody who's potentially playing on his same wavelength.
Absolutely, absolutely. Yeah, really like him.
Two things I love about McCormack today. It was number one, obviously, the assist for Gested. I thought that was brilliant. It was a touch of class. And then number two, the amount of runs he made. And the fact that, like I said before, we were feeding him earlier. Against Wednesday, I was looking, and Ayew'd pick up the ball. McCormack would run off. It's obviously McCormack's debut, so they've got to sort of gel together. But today, as soon as McCormack made a run, they'd drill it into him, or he'd take a defender with him. It's brilliant the way he does it. He creates a lot of space for those around him.
One final thing, great corners.
Yeah.
Great
corners.
So you don't. So you don't have a problem with a centre forward taking corners. I mean, with Harry Kane, it was in the European Championships. It was a bit of an odd one because he's a 6 foot plus striker. Mm-hmm. But obviously McCormack's was, what is he, like 5'9"?
Mm-hmm. I think he's 5'9", and we don't have another great dead ball corner taker. And immediately you're looking and thinking, well, this is better than the Westwood floated pass that was just a waste of time. And I think if you can put two or three balls in like he did today every week, you'd like to think Gested will get on the end of one of those sooner or later. Yeah.
It just proves that the ball doesn't have to be pinpoint from a corner. All he does is just whip it in the area and then attack it.
Well, I mean, beating the first man's always a start.
Yeah, that's true.
I don't want to sound too cynical, but this was only Rotherham, and Villa really should be putting them away at home. So in that context, was there anything that was a cause for concern? I mean, obviously from the first two games, but from this game as well. Dan?
I think Gallini's been a little bit flappy during the Rotherham game. He also, his error that led to the Sheffield Wednesday goal as well on the opening game. I think that's the only thing so far that I would say is.
Yeah, I would like to see Gallini under like a sustained period of pressure where a team gets two or three corners on the trot. Three games, but I still don't really have a sense of him as a goalkeeper. Is there anything else?
I'd say Alan Hutton on the bench.
Our bench generally is a cause for concern. Yeah. I think it sort of showed today that we didn't have a great deal in terms of the centre mids anyway. That the next option after a Westwood or a centre mid is Gardner.
Centre backs is even worse though.
It was more a bench because the players weren't good enough to get in the team rather than a bench offering any alternatives. Yeah, that was very apparent when the team lineout came out. Let's talk about the business, what we expect to be done, because, Tony, Dr. Tony on Twitter has obviously been excitably saying there's about three or four players, did he say, that were still going to come in, and Keith Wyness seems to have backed that up. So we spoke before we started recording about Villa not actually having a marquee signing, Dan. I mean, obviously that's going to attract season ticket sales or tickets full stop if it's somebody that fans want to come and watch. But obviously in the Championship, it's not as appealing to like decent players. But I mean, what do you think Tony will try to get somebody who's a bit of a name, even if he's a little bit older?
I think he might. And I think there's a little bit of, especially with his tweets, he's increasingly cryptic with stuff as well. This whole question mark around the number 9 shirt that he's sort of teasing us with, and it'll go one of two ways, this one, where he'll either, it will be someone quite run-of-the-mill who you might reasonably expect that we could get, or we might get someone out the bag who, I think we all crave a marquee signing. We don't necessarily need one, because I think we need to add the types of players we have been. Slowly and blooding them. But wouldn't it be nice to have, I don't know, Benteke on loan for 6 months? Like, there seems to be this suggestion of Bamford as well, doesn't there? That's the rumour that won't go away. And
but Bamford wouldn't exactly be a marquee signing, would it?
Well, that's why you wonder whether there might be maybe within Paddy Riley's amazing scouting network, the showstopper signing, and maybe as you alluded to, really, someone who's perhaps 33, 34, 35 in and around Europe, who's got a season. And I think we mentioned in the first podcast, like a Cambiasso, albeit as a striker, that sort of figurehead who you go, wow, we've got him playing for us. They might not be the game changer, but for 30 minutes or...
So what are we missing then? If they're talking about three or four players still to come in, I mean, I think defence was sorted out, apart from probably if Richie Delac comes in from Leicester or some other right-back, because I think right-back, I don't think Bakuna is the answer for the whole season. No. So apart from that, what are we talking? Are we talking a striker?
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Picture the scene. All of your mates around, you've got your McNugget share boxes ready to go. Partner this with your team playing champagne football. Perfect. Order McDelivery now on the McDonald's app. There's nothing quite like a McDelivery. At participating restaurants, 18 plus, serving times, delivery fee and terms apply. See mcdonalds.com.
And two midfielders, one of the midfielders maybe being a winger as well. What's your thoughts on that, Chad?
Two centre midfielders? I don't know if we need a winger now, do we? I'd offer him that option, yeah. I'd say if Adama wouldn't be included, then definitely, because we had no sign of him earlier on, but yeah, definitely that. And then probably a striker.
And Dan,
what
are you looking for?
We're certainly light. I think that look at the bench again today, that it was a number of players who, what are they going to bring to the party if we need them?
Yeah.
Definitely need cover at right back. Definitely need another goalkeeper, as I said in the first podcast.
Yeah, I agree on the goalkeeper front,
not,
for sure.
Not to say it's a priority as such, but
you just got to cover your ass over the long season.
Absolutely, yeah. And we definitely need another centre midfielder. And without wanting to be horrible to Westwood, we've got to be looking to improve upon what we've got. You know, there's got to be some... We'll put some pressure on him as well.
You know, Di Matteo's obviously dabbled with a bit of Gardner. I mean, maybe he'll find his feet for a few more appearances.
No, I think it was a real shame he's looked so disappointing in the two main fixtures he's appeared in. And someone made a good point to me when I was sat in him today, that it's very different turning out for Nottingham Forest as he has been, with lower expectations. They've been middling around the championships. Our expectations are promotion. It is promotion.
Yeah.
We need a quality, complete footballer. And I have been disappointed with what I've seen from Gardner so far, to be honest. And I'd be worried about having just him on the bench.
Yeah, I've given him the benefit of the doubt for many seasons now, and you know, wanted to champion him as the all-round midfielder, captain of the club. But I think he's potentially in final weeks before he may be loaned out again, because he hasn't got long left on his contract, I don't think.
No, he hasn't. That's why I thought that the Luton game particularly was so poor from him, because he looked short in a number of areas where we were being overrun, and I thought, hang on, we're going to be coming up against harder outfits than Luton this season, and he looked a bit headless for me.
Yeah.
So that was a big concern, and probably for Di Matteo.
In terms of players coming in, I think Di Matteo said there was like a deadline that he wanted everything in place, which was kind of next week, but I think that this transfer window hasn't come alive yet. I mean, I was, you know, you're looking at watching Match of the Day, and you've got like Hull with 13 fit players and they haven't bought anybody. Burnley have bought one player, probably Stephen Defoe's coming in, West Brom the same, but a lot of these teams are light and they've got all this money and nobody's really, apart from the big top end clubs, have really splashed the cash yet. And you think they would have, obviously, because there's a vested interest in staying in the division.
Mm-hmm. Maybe the Euros.
Yeah, but once it sparks up, I think it might obviously also change the landscape for Villa and, you know, potentially offer up opportunities for in and outs. Because can Mikhail Richards hang around as a kind of an odds and sods player?
Yeah, exactly.
I don't think that's in his interest either way. He doesn't seem to be the kind of character that will just sit around picking up his wage either.
Well, is the question marks above a Corey's head as well now?
Chester coming in sends, you know, big signal. I mean, it's not as if they bought him for a couple of a million just as a backup defender to give us depth there. This is around 8 million, which suggests, sorry, Corey, but you're not doing the job for us.
Mm-hmm. But it's worrying though that, like Baker when he got injured, that we have to rely on Okoro and Richards, and I'd like to see someone like Toner be promoted. But
well, I think Toner's in thinking in terms of depth. You have four centre-backs essentially to cover most injury situations, but if Toner's fourth or fifth, then that's where he sits at the moment. But Okoro was meant to be the answer. I mean, he was... For me, when the season he came in, he was like the biggest signing of that summer, and offering pace and power at the back, he was going to transform the Villa defence. But, you know, he's too susceptible to injury, and then he kind of switches off at times during games.
Like he did against Liverpool.
Well, he almost had two.
Good grief.
Yeah, that's true.
I don't know what he was thinking.
So it's hard to tell, you know, if these certain players can knuckle down and they can transform. But going back to the bomb squad, Mark II, I mean, Gabby, it's quite funny. The good doctor basically said, we've had a word. He knows where he's gone wrong. We've given him a solution. And that seems to be he's going out on loan for a year. And I think if he goes out for a year, he's not coming back. And the only reason we're talking a loan is because he has A, he's being paid too much. He's not going to get that anywhere else. And there's too many years left on his contract because, was it Mr. Fox decided that Villa fans actually loved Gabby and that he should stay as some kind of talisman?
Oh, dear. Yes.
You can't really have players like that hanging around, can you?
Like a bad smell. No.
He's given us singular great moments, Gabby has.
Yeah.
But they're all in the past and we need to move on.
Well, exactly. I mean, he's somebody that has done great things. And as you said, he sometimes hasn't performed over a whole season. I mean, he should have been in the 20s in terms of goals, in, you know, let's say for the Martin O'Neill years.
I always think back to those years because you look at that group of players that it wasn't great for us, but your Milners, your Youngs and others, they all moved on to bigger and better things, the Barrys.
Yeah.
Gabby didn't, and the reason for that was he could never do it consistently or well enough,
yeah.
Or, you know, he never scored the 20 goals or never applied himself. It's just your classic one great game in five man, isn't he, really?
So on to the three left-back situation. You think Bennett's on his way out and Sissoko. I mean, last week you berated me for even suggesting that Sissoko should stick around. But
Is this my Dan moment, Gusted? But yeah, today when I saw him on the team sheet, again, everyone was saying, oh, it's such a brilliant team sheet. But I don't know, he stuck out like a sore thumb for me, and I was thinking. But I still don't feel comfortable with him there. And I thought fullbacks were exposed at the start of the game. I was like, Bakuna and Sissoko, but they're both proven wrong. Sissoko even more. We're in the first 5 minutes when he struck a shot to the top corner and forced their keeper into a world-class save. I was like, who's that? He actually played really well from that point on.
Annoyingly well.
Probably contender for man of the match. If we look at that way, almost scored a goal, got an assist, and did his job defensively very well.
Yeah,
and overlapped. He overlapped more than Bakuna, considering Bakuna's an attacking player.
I said earlier that Bakuna probably had his best game. I thought Sissoko arguably had his best game. Mm-hmm. The thing I always think that he's physically massive as well. And that in the at championship level, that's got to count for it. Because that kid on the wing was not getting past him all day. He was just...
Yeah, that's what I'm thinking. Chance. If he can sort of the defensive side out and he's solid there, then he had some physicality to those two short-arse centre-backs that we've got. And I mean, for example, he's not Alan Wright. So for the starters, you're adding. You know, when we're defending corners, I would rather have him in there than Bennett.
I mean, Bennett hasn't got that physical.
But at the same time, if we're going to be one of the dons of this division, we want to be attacking pretty much most of the time and hopefully slaughtering teams. So you want something with a bit more finesse, and that's obviously where Amavi comes in, and hopefully that will happen. But championship level, I mean, I could probably survive with Sissoko in there as that number two if we're having two out of the three left-backs that we've got.
Yeah, I'd agree with that.
And now a word from our commercial partners. Do you need a break from the villa? Sail in style to the tropics with Ulysses de la Cruz's.
Well, I think Luton was a massive wake-up call. Just seeing the doctor's poor face as his chin sunk into his hand.
Negative, and it was a big negative result, was actually potentially one of the biggest positives at the start of the season, because for all his enthusiasm, he knew it wasn't going to be a walk in the park, and you know they went out and bought a player within hours of that. What did you think of his performance today, Dan?
I think he's almost a parody of himself, isn't he? He's a caricature, and we're all warming to him, I'm sure, and I thought it was hilarious, and it was brilliant, and he's annoyingly likable, you know, and it's again, it's such a contrast. Could you imagine Lerner of having done that? And it's just so bonkers to even consider it. But the fact that he was out there, he's very visible, and I think that you're right with the Luton game. It was such a wake up call because he was sat there, he was exposed to that, and he attaches himself to the club in such a way that I don't know whether he feels it as much as we do. But he was embarrassed by the Luton game. And as you say, he pushed a button to say, we need to sort this out. And that's why I do think there could be a marquee signing in this. And I do wonder that he strikes me as the kind of guy who would love nothing more than to carry out Ronaldo on his shoulders onto the halfway line before the Huddersfield game and go, well... fuck you, Holloway. This is what we're doing.
But he's somebody, I was chatting to Chad before we pressed record, that there's two ways of looking at Dr. Tony. And one is like, how's this going to end up? And that is kind of quite, you know, fatalistic. Mm-hmm. And there's only one way most things end up, and that's badly. I mean, you're born, you die. I mean, that's the yeah. circle of life. So,
taxes.
And is Dr. Tony going to be the villa owner for the rest of all our lifetimes? Every villa fan living today, probably unlikely. But the other way of looking at Dr. Tony is just to live in the moment, and I've started to warm to him from that fact, because I've always looked at things right. Okay, this is happening. How's it going to end? But in this situation, it's almost so much fun, and it rips up the rule book of what owners should be doing, and they should be conservative with what they're putting out there, and they shouldn't really be discussing transfers and potential transfers on social media. Nobody else does it. He's doing it, and why is it wrong if it's never been done before? It's kind of refreshing in a lot of ways, because it just cut away so much of the bullshit of transfer rumors and the media that purposely make up crap just to, get their advertising for the month, you know, hit the targets for the month. So in that respect, it's a lot of fun.
Now it's time for Twitter with Tony. August 10th. Even we agreed to take the Luton Town match as chicken game. Some players are not worth being given chance. August 11th. Don't make story with me and RDM. RDM chose the team and board made decisions not given out for free, especially to rival. No more silly deals. August 12th. I can take it as how much Villa fans love me, how much rival fans hate me. Not bad. August 13th. Thanks for your support, which is the force keep Villa going to a brighter future together. August 13th. I think we may have the number 9 for the incoming striker to be real good number 9. August 13th. Once we got the winning feeling back, it will keep going. The sleeping lion has woken up. OTV.
I've seen on social media now that some fans even envy how open the club is, and I'd love it to stay that way, and fingers crossed it does. It's just a complete refreshing approach at the moment. I love it. I'm falling in love with Dr. Tony in the way he is. And I just think as well that a lot of things that he says shouldn't be taken too seriously. I think he's got a bit of a humorous approach about him. And, yeah.
Yeah.
I think that's the point with him. He's so, I said in the first podcast, I don't think there's a great deal of planning that necessarily goes into what he's... It's just, he's got, that's quite... Hang on, let's get that out about Gabby. Let's say that actually we've had a chat with him and he's a bit crap and we're getting rid of him for a year. I think part of the PR team at Villa's going, oh, grief. And then the other half, I mean, it's us two, as fans, we know that's what the club are thinking.
Yeah, what he's doing, he's sometimes doing things that people are thinking. I'm sure that people are thinking at Villa, this player, you know, is a pain in the butt. And here's their owner actually going out on social media and just saying that. So part of it, I think, well, glad he said that one. I mean, it's obviously not making their life easy. Like the James Chester thing. You're kind of waiting. Okay, is he coming in? What's happening?
I love it that way.
Let's not mess around with press conferences. Let's not mess around with the official photo shoot. I'll just tweet a picture of a firm handshake. You know the deal's done.
It's damn effective. And what could you ever imagine a scenario where Tom Fox could have given a straight answer on a transfer dealing or anything for that matter? And no, it just wouldn't have happened.
No.
And that's if there's one thing, and, you know, we don't know how this will pan out. We don't know how it will end. It is kind of nice to stand on the sidelines or sit in the hall tent, look up and go, look at that crazy guy over there having such fun. He's having a lovely time. And
yeah,
if he brings us some success and gets us back to the Premier League, I can live with that.
Yeah.
Also, if you buy into him, and for somebody who's pretty much, let's say he's only just got into this, he's got some real genuine passion, you know,
passion. Passion's a word. I mean, I'm not a big fan of that word because, you know, what does it mean? But he seems invested, emotionally invested from the off.
Well, who drives up to Sheffield and stops off at a crappy service station and gets photographed next to Burger King? You know, that guy...
Maybe he was desperate for the toilet.
You love a Whopper, don't you, on the way. But that's the investment, and he was genuinely... He went up to Hillsborough to win. He went up and he was peed off. You could see he was annoyed, but he could live with it.
Yeah.
Luton, you could see by his face, he was unimpressed with that. And I think it was WM or one of the other local radio stations said he had to be physically calmed down in the director's room at Luton by the other directors.
Yeah, I mean, I've heard from somebody at the club that they've described him as pretty full on, as in a good way, if you know what I mean, like manically into it. I mean, that, you know, the pregnant lady who just tweeted him joking about wanting a free pie. I mean, he's like, right. Just, you know, just get in my box, full stop, because she's pretty heavily pregnant. So it's not a PR gesture. It's almost like a sensible thing. He's thinking, well, I've got a box here with nobody in it. So, you know, it's a kind of it's a very nice gesture. But I think he's coming at it from it's the right thing to do, full stop.
It's early days, but he's certainly breaking the mold of the genuine football chairman, because all he's bringing is just honesty and excitement. And where do you get that? If you look at the locks of Leeds and their clubs, what's happening there?
I misjudged him. Sorry to interrupt, Chad, but I think the fact that there were 33,000 people there today, and largely I think it was to do with him.
I think his enthusiasm is epitomised at the fact that he was willing to go to Luton Town to watch a game as well. And then the next day, he showed his business by buying a centre back for about £8 million.
And actually walking
well.
Around in the streets of Luton, that takes some credit. If you've ever been there.
If you look at the contrast with Tom Fox, where that payoff was probably something that will live with him forever, and you think how much Tony's worth, and he's just walking around with no security.
Yeah,
that's
an interesting point there. I mean, the contrast, the fact that Tom Fox and cronies last season were walking around with security, and Tony's got a bit more faith and, you know, just goes around with his PA, and that's as simple as that.
Well, it's about connections, isn't it? And, you know, that the team was completely disconnected from the fans. Tom Fox and company were completely disconnected from the fans. And Tony's been clever. He's jumped on the social media thing. We'll see how it pans out. It looks good. It's enjoyable. But he's also been clever with purchases as well. The first purchase of the captain from Bournemouth, who...
Yeah.
He's a... instantly likeable figurehead on the pitch as well, and that works very well. It's progress. It feels like progress, and we've only got one win to base it upon, but it feels good.
I think Dan's hit the nail on the head there, connection with the fans. Today was definitely the day where I feel reconnected again with Elphick, with the owner, Grealish. I just feel
I just wish like some people on social media wouldn't hound the hell out of him and tag him into everything, because he's obviously trying to do the good thing, and just all this noise that's created by tagging him in and asking him about can he, you know, shorten the toilet queues and open these kiosks and whatever. It's kind of stuff that should be directed somewhere else and let him, you know, get on with doing the good stuff.
But one positive that we spoke about before, do you remember how we said that it might turn sour with a bit of hate on Twitter and with a bit of the sort of the people that would give him a bit of stick? Well, I was looking to that, and if you look at his comments, he gets about 20, 30 comments. And then if they're all a bit dodgy, West Brom fans or things like that, giving him a bit of hate, you just see it disappear, the list. I think he just blocks them straight up, which is probably the perfect remedy for it as well. Yeah. His PA probably just blocks all of them, which is brilliant, I think.
So I think he doesn't mess around on social media. He knows what he's doing. Let's close on a five things or five reasons to be cheerful as a Villa fan after this week, and the owner doing a performance on the pitch, which the like of which, God, can you imagine winning a trophy?
Oh. He'd be wearing it on his head. He'd be wearing it on his head.
Who's going for number one? I'll go for number one. There's Grealish. What, there was a statistic that Grealish, the last, was it 19 games he'd been involved with? And don't quote me on 19, it's 18, 17, 19, maybe 20, who knows. But he was involved in that many games and Villa hadn't got a point. In fact, they probably lost most of them. But today, that curse is lifted. I was thinking maybe he is the curse of Villa and we'd probably have to loan him out just to lift it. But I think that goal kind of sets him up for the season. I mean, obviously the one against Leicester did last season. It didn't really kick on from then. But this time, I think he's learnt the lesson from that. So hopefully he'll crack on and get double figures this season and become a man about substance and not just hype.
His goal today was exquisite.
Anybody with a number two?
Oh, I'll go with number two, and that's we won a game. There you go, full stop. Put that in your pipe and smoke it. Next on the checklist is an away game. That's what we need to win next.
Number three, Dan, any offers?
Straightforward, really. Walking away from Villa Park with a sense of optimism and, you know, even when we won in January many, many months ago, I think we all knew we were doomed even then, really. But walking away thinking, wow, this feels like if we could build on this. And, you know, as I said at the beginning, walking away thinking, wow, 3-0. Well, we could have had 6, yeah, though, you know. just a bonkers turnaround from you know, midweek where you're thinking, oh, grief, what's, is this going to pan out? It's just a nice change of direction.
Number four.
Do you want me to go in that one as well? Of early signs of a proper centre-half partnership, despite their height as well. I think they both played really well today. And if we can keep them injury-free, I think that they are brilliant leaders on the pitch, both of them.
Number five? Well, I'm going to go for... Yeah, it's a toss-up between... Adama Traore is alive, and the early collapse of the Raffolution. I mean, I don't mind Geordie fans, and I think Newcastle fans are pretty decent as a bunch. But I just love this wind up that we've got going on.
Oh well, I just don't understand why they didn't think that John Joe Shelby wouldn't work. I just and to be honest, you know, good luck with Kieran Clarke.
At the end of the season Villa go up and Newcastle don't quite make it, Agent Clarke will be there will be a ceremony where he gets a very big gold medal.
We'll have Tony's ear walking out on the pitch with a big cardboard cut out of his head lifting it to the crowd like, yeah.
He will also present Kieran Clarke with a key to the city of Birmingham and probably Shanghai as well.
When is the date for when we relegate into League One? What date is that? Because I need to get my inflatable penis and I need to get my inflatable Tony Zai throw into the stand and road surf on the halt.
Just get my black and white coffin as well. Anyone remembers that for the first time?
My inflatable Peter Beardsley smile all the way down.
Well, we haven't mentioned the Chinese flag. Chinese flag. Chinese flag.
My old man said.
Away days are great, but there's nothing quite like playing at home. The same goes for McDonald's. Maximise your home ground advantage with McDelivery. Order now on the McDonald's app. At participating restaurants, 18 plus, serving times, delivery fee and terms apply. See mcdonalds.com.
Planning for your next trip? Elevate your travel style with Quince. Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/trip for free shipping and 365-day returns.
This podcast is proud to be part of the TalkSport Fan Network. TalkSport. Powered by fans.